Dr. Alan Leica here, and I'd like to welcome you to How to Live a Fantastic Life show, where we will be discussing the important aspects of your life. We hope to inspire you to live the best life you can. Get out of your comfort zone and explore the awesome world around you. Break through your barriers. Take inspired action. Use the difficulties in your life to achieve the best version of you. Ladies and gentlemen, today we have a very special guest. Her name is Dr. Jillian Mandich, and she's a fellow Canadian. Now, her mission in life is to help people live their happiest life. She's a published researcher, a two-time TEDx speaker, and the founder of the International Happiness Institute of Health Science Research. And you can find her on all sorts of media out there because she's been on The Morning Show, Breakfast Television, Marilyn Dennis, The Social, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Her credentials are longer than my arm. Welcome, Jillian.
Hello, I am so happy to be joining you today. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am happy to have you as well. And I know one or two things about happiness because I've taken certificate programs from both Harvard and Yale in them.
That's amazing. It's so exciting that those even exist now, right?
Exactly. And it's also fascinating that both those courses became the number one course or the most attended course in those institutes' history.
Yeah, you know, it's really speaking to this need. We all want to be happy. And so then the question becomes, okay, well, how do we do that? And so now to be able to apply the rigor of research to a topic that is, you know, universal to all of us is such an exciting time to be in this space.
Well, let's go back a minute. What do you mean by happiness? Everybody has their own definition.
Yeah, you're right. You know, if I walked into a room and I polled 100 people and I said, what is your definition of happiness? I probably would receive 100 different answers.
There may be you'd get 120 different answers or 200 answers.
Yeah, very true. And yet, when I say happy, we all have a general idea of what it is. So you know, part of it is that happiness is a very personal experience. And so part of it comes down to how we experience happiness, which is all well and good until you become a happiness researcher, because at the beginning of any research study, you have to define the terms that you are studying. So for myself, when I do research, I use a definition of happiness that actually comes from Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky, and it's one that's commonly cited in the academic literature, which is that happiness is the experience of joy, contentment, and positive well-being combined with a sense that one's life is good, meaningful, and worthwhile. The reason I like this definition is because it casts a wide net, right? So, you know, it talks about sort of the in-the-moment happiness, joy, contentment, peace, but then also sort of this bigger legacy, purpose, peace, right? The experience of one's life being good, meaningful, and worthwhile. So that's the one that I often use. There are lots of them out there because happiness is a very subjective personal experience. It's like love, right? Something like that. It's hard to sometimes encapsulate those feelings into words. So we do the best that we can.
And the number of scientific publications on happiness have literally exploded over the years.
Yeah. You know, it was not until about the mid 90s that we started. So we were doing a graph. There's very little work being done. We were focused on, you know, disease, what's wrong and how do we fix it? And then with the positive psychology beginning as a field, what we see is that in the past 20 or so years, there has just been an explosion of work in this field, I think, because we're understanding that our quality of life matters. And, you know, it's not just about when something goes wrong, how do we fix it? It's about how, given whatever situation I have in my life right now, what can I do to, you know, enhance my life, to make it happier? And so I feel like it's a very exciting field because it is new. There is so much to learn and we are learning so much. And especially with happiness, what researchers used to think is that we were sort of had a set point of our happiness. So kind of like a thermometer in a room where, you know, we have our certain level of happiness and the good thing happens and it goes up. And then we kind of go back down and then maybe something challenging happens. So our happiness goes down, then it kind of goes back. And what we know from recent research is that, yes, there is a piece of our happiness that's genetic. So there is an element of that, but that's not where the conversation ends. And what we know now is just like if you want to go into the gym and exercise to get stronger, it's almost like part of our happiness is a muscle. And so when we do things, we can take whatever set point we have and we can actually increase our happiness and sustain it at higher levels. And so I think that that's really exciting. And that's where my work focuses on is like, how do we actually increase our happiness in a meaningful way to enhance our quality of life and our
Jillian,
physical health
I'm
as
going to
well?
get you to stop there for a minute because we have to pause for a commercial message. And ladies and gentlemen, come right back because at the end of this message, you're going to hear why happier people are better. In other words, they have certain things about them that make them live better lives. Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a very special fellow Canadian with me today, Jillian Mandich, and she's talking today about happiness. Now, what are the features that make happy people different than everybody else?
Yeah, you know, this is a great question. And so when we look at sort of the benefits of happiness, let's start there. So when we compare happier people to less happy people from a physical health perspective, what we see is that happier people have lower rates of cardiovascular disease. They have stronger immune systems. They heal faster from injury. They tend to sleep better, both in terms of duration and also sleep quality. And they tend to make better nutritional choices. So from our physical health, we see that there's a ton of benefits, but it even extends beyond there. So if we look at how we show up in our life at work, we see that happier people are more productive. They're more creative. They get better job evaluations from their supervisors. They're better liked by customers and clients. And even in our personal lives, they have longer and more fulfilling marriages and friendships. They're more altruistic. So they're more likely to volunteer their time or their money to help out in their community. So really, what is so exciting about happiness, I think, is that when we focus on this one thing, not only does it feel good to be happy, but the benefits really do extrapolate into so many other facets of our life that it really is sort of like, you know, this like special sauce that you can sprinkle all over your life, and it just really does enhance the human experience.
Yeah, I've heard you explain that unhappy people are like a black and white TV out of focus. Whereas if you're having happiness, you're like a totally new colored TV with all the digital features in it, bringing life into focus.
Yeah, I love to think of it like that because, you know, so many of us go on autopilot, right? We go through our day, we go through the motions. And yet that's sort of like looking at life through, like you said, through a black and white TV where it's just, it is what it is. But why do that when we can actually watch TV in like 4K high definition? It's going in the 3D world, right? Where we can actually experience more, where things are brighter, where things are sharper, where we're actually able to enhance our life. And so instead of just going on our life through autopilot, we can actually be intentional about some of the behaviors and thoughts and actions that we have. And by doing that, we can actually really enhance our life and really start thriving and flourishing in our life as opposed to just going through the motions of life.
Now, you also have stated in some of your talks about how happiness differs at different times in your life, at least in the populations that you've seen. Like people are happier at certain times in their life. When is that?
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of work being done in this area, and it's a little bit controversial. You'll see some that talk about how we have this inverse U, so our happiness sort of peaks midlife. And I think more than that, we all have ebbs and flows in our life. We all have times that we go through that are more challenging. Maybe we're going through a divorce or a job loss, and our happiness may go down. And yet other areas of our life, we may see, you know, when we get a new job or when we graduate from school or when we get a big promotion. So we have those highs and lows. And I think there's a lot of individuality in that. But I think that the key thing to recognize is that happiness is not a destination, right? It's not something that we arrive at one day. It's a practice, it's a habit, and it's a skill. And so no matter where we are throughout the lifespan, no matter how happy or unhappy we're feeling right now, I think the big key that is very clear from research is that each and every one of us has the capacity to increase our happiness, to sort of build that skill, to grow that muscle, no matter where we are in any stage of our life. And especially, I think, during difficult and challenging times, that while it may seem like a time that we may not want to focus on happiness, oftentimes that can be a very opportune time to be able to start to shift things. You know, we obviously feel all the feelings that we go through, right? The other piece is that we can't be happy all the time. You know, people sometimes think that because I study happiness that I'm happy all the time, but it's impossible. And we see this in research sometimes referred to as like the dark side of happiness, right? Where people that actually set their goal is to be happy all the time are less happy because they've set an impossible goal. And so I think that really focusing on for ourselves, answering the question, first of all, what makes me happy, like answering that for ourselves, and then thinking about, okay, well, how can I create more opportunities in my life to do more things, to prioritize and to make the time and put in the effort for happiness? Because, you know, sometimes we see these quote cards on Instagram or Facebook that say, choose happiness. And the reality is, it isn't that easy. It's not like we just wake up in the morning and we decide what we're going to have for breakfast and we choose happiness. It actually requires work and effort.
Okay, Jillian, I'm going to get you to hold that thought. And ladies and gentlemen, Jillian is talking to us about happiness. And Jillian Mandrich is an expert on this. And when we come back from this commercial message, we're going to talk about the myths of happiness. You need to be there to hear them. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about a Canadian expert on happiness, Jillian Mandich, and she's going to tell us about the myths of happiness today.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, when we were growing up, I don't know about you, but in school, I was never taught how to be happy. Did you learn how to be happy in school?
No, but I was a pretty happy kid and I had a lot going for me. So I didn't really pay much attention. You know, I didn't have to be taught to be happy. I was just happy.
Oh, well, you are very lucky because for a lot of us, you know, we were never taught how to be happy. And then it gets messy and convoluted because we have TV and media and marketing and social media sort of projecting what they feel that happiness is. And yet happiness is not these, you know, what we see from research is that, say, for example, we want a new house or a new car or something like that. We think that that's going to make us happy. One, what we see is that if we got that thing, it doesn't bring us as much happiness as we anticipated that it would. And it doesn't last for as long as we think that it does. And so one of the myths around happiness is that, you know, it's something that we get it and then we're good, right? We always say, I will be happy when I fill in the blank. And yet it's a practice. So really recognizing that it's something that we have to work at and cultivate our entire life. It's sort of like physical activity or good nutrition, right? We have to choose to move our body most days and eat healthy food most of the time if we want to be happy. And with happiness, it's sort of the same thing where we actually have to practice it. And I think another big myth about happiness is that, you know, and this is actually one that was personally for me when I first started researching happiness. I thought, okay, I don't like feeling sad. I don't like feeling anxiety. I don't like feeling depressed. And so I want to research happiness so that I can figure out how to get rid of all those challenging emotions and just be happy all the time. And what I quickly learned is that that idea is a myth. And we actually, when we think about healthy psychological functioning, we're humans that have a full spectrum and a full range of emotions. And so really giving ourselves permission to feel, to be human, yes, we can cultivate more happiness. And happy doesn't mean that we don't have challenging or difficult times that we go through as well.
Exactly. I think it's very important to realize that this thing called happiness is something that people have to develop. And it's like a muscle that's inside your body that you develop over time.
Exactly. I kind of think about it like this. Like when we go into the gym, we want to get strong. We lift weights to grow our muscles. And it's sort of like when we do things throughout our day to make us happier, then our happiness muscle gets stronger. And then what happens is we get stronger and stronger. And then when a challenging or a difficult thing happens, whether it be a pandemic or a job loss or a divorce or whatever it is, our muscle is stronger. So we're able to cope with those difficult things in a more resilient way. So it's not about eliminating them, but when our muscle is stronger, we are better equipped. We are stronger to be able to handle whatever it is that life decides that it wants to throw at us.
Exactly. Now, here's a difficult question. What is the opposite of happiness?
So I ask this question a lot. I do a lot of public speaking and work with organizations, and I ask that exact question often. And what's interesting is that I get a wide range of things, sadness, I get anger, frustration, but the opposite of happiness is actually apathy. It's not caring at all. I think the most common response that I get is sadness. But when we actually look at the emotions, if we think about each emotion on a continuum, so on one side we have really happy and on one side we have not happy at all. That's where apathy is. A separate construct, we have sadness. So we have not sad at all and very sad. We can actually be happy and sad at the same time. That's called the bittersweet emotion. But really the opposite of happiness is having no feelings. It's just being ambivalent. It's apathy. Great question.
Thank you very much. Now, Jillian, it is such an honor to have you here because I know you can teach people how to be happy. How can people become happier in their lives?
You know, one of the things I have to say, like the number one question that I get asked when I tell somebody that I'm a happiness researcher is they ask me, okay, Jillian, like what's the magic pill, right? What's the one thing I need to do or buy or get or say in order to be happy? And the truth is there is no magic pill. There's no one thing that's going to miraculously come and make you happy. It really is a practice and it requires effort and it requires work. It requires us to answer that question for ourselves. So yes, I can look to the research and the data and say, these are some activities that are highly correlated with happiness. Things like gratitude, social connection, getting proper nutrition and sleep. Those things all contribute to our happiness, but each and every one of us is unique. And so is our own sort of recipe or formula for happiness. And part of the work is really taking the time to ask ourselves that question. And I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations with research participants. And when I ask them, I say, are you as happy as you possibly could be? I've never had someone say yes. Never said someone, you know what, I'm good, right? We all want to be happier no matter where we are. And yet when I ask the second follow-up question and I ask, okay, well, what makes you happy? What often happens is one of two things. Either before they start their exhale, they're answering me, my mom, my dog, my cat, my sister, my brother, where it's almost like a reflexive answer. Or I hear like a really long pause and they really have to think about the answer. And so think about that. If I ask someone what makes them happy and their answer is either a reflex, so they haven't actually taken the time to answer, or they really have to think about it, then it's pretty apparent that we need some time to think about those answers. And the only person that can do that for ourselves is us. And so really taking that time for ourselves to answer that question, what makes me happy? What are those things throughout my day that I feel like give me a boost, that make me smile, that make me feel, you know, more alive, more connected? And that's a great place for each and every one of us to start in terms of
answering. And so I'm going to put you on the spot, Jillian.
Sure.
How did you become a happier person?
So, you know, I wish I would have measured my happiness when I first started researching happiness, because I would have to say, like you, I am a fairly happy, positive, optimistic person. Not to say that I'm happy all the time, but I do feel like when I read things in research, for example, practicing gratitude, I try those things personally in my life as well. And so for myself, a couple of the big ones have been is focusing on my relationship, social connection. What we see data coming out of the Harvard study of adult development, which is a really robust longitudinal study. So they've been following participants since 1938. And what we see is that social connections are so important for us. And I think that this is an important one because often when we get busy and our to-do lists get full, something that drops off of our list is taking the time to call a friend or taking the time to actually go for a walk with someone, a colleague or a friend, and really connect with each other. And then for me, another really big one is during the pandemic, I got a puppy. And there's a lot of good research in terms of how pets can help us with our happiness. And so I have a little French bulldog. He's actually sleeping beside me. So as a side note, if you hear snoring at all during this conversation, I'm not putting myself to sleep. It's my French bulldog. He's snoring. But he is someone that brings me a lot of joy. He keeps me structured with purpose, right? I have to take him out. And that's been a really big happiness enhancer for me.
Well, that's
how about
huge.
You?
You know,
I
just went through that Harvard challenge on becoming happier. And what I chose for my rewirement challenge was to do more exercise, because a lot of my day I'm sitting at my computer talking to wonderful people like you, and I don't necessarily get enough exercise. And I found that increased my happiness.
Yeah. And exercise is a really good one, because we kind of see a couple different reasons why it can enhance their happiness. One, when we see that, you know, and there's research that shows sometimes that exercise can be as effective as antidepressants for some people in terms of their mood. And the other really good thing is a lot of the skills that are highly correlated with happiness is a slow build over time. We're starting to learn a new habit, but sometimes it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and we're feeling a little low, or we're feeling a little grumpy, but we want to instantly switch our mood. And exercise is one of the most effective instant mood boosters. And it doesn't need to be a lot. What we see is that even 10 minutes of movement can greatly increase someone's odds of being happier.
Yeah. And another thing that I think is so important right now is to turn off the news. You know,
yes,
we had 2 years of the pandemic when the world was going to end. And now we're going to a recession where the same news is going on. As we're talking, 2 major banks in the United States were put under the government's control, and Credit Suisse has been having some problems. So the Saudis have pulled their money out of Credit Suisse. So there is some stuff happening on a global basis right now that will keep you awake at nights if you listen to it before you go to bed.
Yeah. And actually some work from Sean Aker and Michelle Gillen, they found that watching 3 minutes, so just 3 minutes of news that we perceive to be negative, people that do that have a 27% greater likelihood of reporting their day as unhappy 6 to 8 hours later. So I think another piece of this conversation that's important is recognizing that it's not a matter of turn on the news, turn off the news, go about your day, knowing that the residue of that stays with us and can impact our mood even 6 to 8 hours later. We think about how many difficult things are going on in our life that we can't control. News in particular, media, social media, is something that we can. And so really being mindful, I'm not saying that we all need to live in a bubble and never check in. We need to be informed, but we really need to be intentional and deliberate about consuming it and when we're consuming it, right? We do not need to go on and check the news first thing in the morning or right before bed, right? And just really understanding that the impact that that can play in terms of our mood is very significant.
Now, in 2008, we had a banking crisis, and the bankers that did the best, that were less stressed, were the most happy and resilient, had what in common, Julia?
Yeah. So back in 2008, I love that you brought this up. I love this study. This is work from Sean Aker. And what they did was they went in and they studied bankers during the financial crisis, which is a very stressful time. And yet, like you said, there was this subgroup that were fairly resilient, even during this difficult and challenging time. And when the researchers looked at, well, what's different about this group? It wasn't their education level. It wasn't how long they'd been with the organization. It wasn't years of experience. The only thing that was different was that these resilient bankers didn't see a problem as a threat. They saw it as a challenge to overcome. So the lens that they viewed the situation through was different. Instead of feeling like it's a threat, like something's coming at me, when we feel like we're being threatened, what do we want to do, right? We want to run, we want to hide, we want to protect ourselves. But if we see something as a challenge, then we think, okay, what's the solution? How do I problem solve? How do I figure this out? And just looking at the same situation like that had a really big impact. And now those same researchers, they also did a follow-up study looking at, were these people just born that way? Were they just naturally born to see things as a challenge? And what they found is that this is something that can be learned. And just by watching a video, an instructional video that talked about how to see something as a challenge as opposed to a threat, They saw a decrease in stress levels of the employees. They saw an increase in their happiness and an increase in their work engagement. And so this is something that we can learn. We can control how we're seeing things. And when we can see things as a challenge, it can have a very significant impact on our behaviors and on how we feel, especially during stressful times.
Exactly. Well, Jillian, we're at the end of our time together already. It's flown by. Can you
tell people how you're having fun?
Oh, that is, it is for sure. Can you tell people how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is my name, which is Jillian Mandich, and I'm Jillian with a G, so it's GILLIANMANDICH, and that's a good hub. All my social links are there. All of my things are there, and that's a great place to visit. Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, go to my website, Dr. Ellen Leica, DrAllen Leica, LYCKA, because there you'll be given a golden pearl each and every week. Bye for now and have a fantastic day.
You've been listening to How to Live a Fantastic Life. Be sure and pick up a copy of Dr. Leica's book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, on Amazon.com. And you'll want to subscribe right here on this page so you don't miss a single episode. Have a fantastic day.